B-Pod Studios.
You're listening to Checkpoint AFK. To listen to the full episode, go to checkpointxp.com.
Welcome back to Checkpoint AFK. We got our special guest, Brandon Braithwaite. You know him from the Grassroots Podcast, Cheddar Esports, and more. And right now, we're going to talk about the news of the week, which was the PS5 reveal. Guys, before we even dive deep into any of the details, what was your favorite announcement from this? We're going to start with you, Brandon.
My favorite announcement was the fact that I got memes out of the way that the PS5 looks. And Kena and Deathloop.
By the way, it's weird to me that they had two games in that announcement that used that same kind of mechanic of like the Deathloop stuff.
Yeah.
It's funny that it's now a thing. I think I'm more excited for Ratchet and Clank, for like a killer platformer that hopefully won't, you know, just be marketed towards kids. You do that, I'm sold. I'm good. I'm in.
For me, Callie. I'm so torn between Resident Evil 8 and Project Athia. I thought both of those looked super cool, but I mean, come on, it's got to be Spider-Man, right? Like,
you know what? It's. I'm really excited for Spider-Man. I think it was very interesting of them to lead the show with Spider-Man.
Yes, and especially not the same shitty Spider-Man that you've seen a million times. You know, they
exactly.
Didn't just go, "Yo, it's the same thing. We know you idiots will buy it." Like.
No,
they went in.
The last Spider-Man game like blew my mind. Like it was like, yes, this is like they took the Batman Arkham combat and gave it to a guy with the spider sense, where it actually makes sense for him to have the spider sense. So I love it. And now I'm in Miles Morales. I'm super geeked for that. I'm super geeked that it's not just a continuation of the story we got in the last one. He's gonna kind of be his own thing, and he'll have sequels to his game as well. Yes, I'm super into it. I hope Carnage is the villain.
We've already had a Spider-Man game, because every Spider-Man game review in the past 50 years has had the same, this game makes you feel just like Spider-Man when you're playing it. Like, it's the tacky review line for any Spider-Man game.
Right.
Well, guess what? That's what the last Spider-Man game was. It was the ultimate, like, look, you've now...
It was the Spidey Sim.
Yeah, you've felt like Spider-Man now. What's the review going to say on this next one? Like, I don't want to see it makes you feel like Spider-Man. They've got to give you a real... Like what
it's
else?
Like Spider-Verse.
You are Spider-Man now.
Yes. Yeah. can I ask though on the Resident Evil 8 thing? This is two Resident Evil trailers in a row where they got me. I had no idea what the game was until the title card dropped at the end. Because I remember watching that trailer for Resident Evil 7, be like, okay, cool. We're kind of like in a swamp area. This is neat. There's monsters and stuff. Like, because they showed off like some of the black ooze monsters and stuff. I'm like,
yeah.
All right, cool. A new survival horror game, Resident Evil 7. Holy crap! They look like made a good Resident Evil again. That's crazy. And then this one looked almost like. Like Cthulhu-esque, like
yeah.
it was
yeah.
another weird
Lovecraftian.
Yeah, it looked it was another weird twist, and then they dropped like you're in this village and you're like, okay, cool, another cool new survival horror IP. No, they got me again. It's Resident Evil 8. Oh,
I mean, I'm hyped for it too. Brandon, you were saying,
oh no, I was gonna say for me, like seeing Chris Redfield, that's when I was like, oh
Listen.
I thought it was like some new like Silent Hill type of game. I was like, all right, cool. Silent Hill is going to the swamp now. Like, but nah, I guess not.
So can we talk about how Chris is getting bigger every time we see him? Because like in Resident Evil 1, Chris was like a regular shaped dude. And then in Resident Evil 5, he'd been weightlifting for the last four games, and that's why we hadn't seen him.
In Resident Evil 6, he punches boulders. What are you talking about?
Well, no, that's what I mean. Then in Resident Evil 6, he's gotten even bigger. He's like a Goliath now. And now, like, in Resident Evil 8, we just see him, like, wearing that big blocky coat, hiding how huge he is. I hope he gets bigger in every scene that we see him in.
Yo, what if we find out that Chris Redfield low-key was injected with a small dose of the T-virus, and that is how he's been able to get swole throughout the years, and it's functioned like a hypersteroid, and Chris is now the villain leader of this village because the T-virus has finally warped his mind into, you know, becoming this, you know,
It's like Wesker in Rapture or something like that.
Yeah,
I mean, based on the way the trailer ended, it almost feels like that. Like he didn't like the person didn't really seem very happy to see Chris. Like,
yeah.
So I don't know, maybe.
Chris did not necessarily look like he was the good guy in this one, which would be an interesting twist. Although we saw, because we see Chris at the end of 7, right? Like he's the one who shows up with the star, with the umbrella team, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I could believe maybe he's gone to the dark side.
The one thing that it's fueled is my fan theory that a Resident Evil 4 remake is being done, because there's no way that they make a bunch of castle assets like that and then just go, we're not going to do 4 as well. Like,
they're absolutely redoing it.
Yeah, they've remade 2, they've remade 3, 4 is next on the docket, baby.
Yeah,
absolutely.
They got to be careful with that, because like, so people loved 2, right? And it was old enough and janky enough that you could absolutely justify a remake. Not as many people loved 3. So, like, again, when they remade Nemesis, there's not a whole lot of people out there who are like, that was my game when I was a kid. No, 2 was your game, and you also played 3. So that one's just fine. Okay, well, there's a lot of people out there who really loved 4 for the GameCube. Like, that was, like, the game. You got to be careful with this remake.
But listen, we said the same thing about the 7 remake, and they came out and kicked everybody in the chest with one of the best games of the past few years. Okay, I'm under these companies. What's happening is I feel like a lot of these old execs who are at the top in the 90s, who like either retired or are getting ready to retire, are finally like, wait a minute, this company has gotten away from our core ideals. We're about to make a fuck ton of money, release the old shit, because that's what made us famous. And so I feel like, you know, this whole wave of remakes and stuff is great in both hands, because the consumers love this stuff. And at the same time, it's making them money like never before. So I'm here for, if they remake 4, it would have to be like one of the worst games ever to be trash. How bad it has to be.
I just think Square Enix spent, you'll never convince me that they didn't start developing the FF7 remake for the PlayStation 3 and it just took them that long to finish it.
Sir,
I do not have the faith in Capcom to spend 10 years faithfully remaking Resident Evil 4.
Excuse me, Callie. The last 3 Final Fantasies are tech demos for the FF7 remake.
Correct.
Okay?
That's absolutely correct.
Yes, they have been making that game for 15 fucking years. But I want to move on from Resident Evil and from remakes. No, Rick, we're moving.
Right.
Anyway,
that's what I was going to ask. I want to know Brandon's opinion on something that's been bugging me.
Mm-hmm.
Why was the PlayStation reveal better received than the Xbox reveal? Like, the Xbox reveal got fucking trashed. It got made fun of. You know what I mean? Like, everybody was
by us.
So, yeah, everybody was up in arms because they said, it's all, you know, it's, look at this. We're going to give you play demo stuff. We're going to give you game footage. We're going to give you, like, all this. Sony didn't promise any of that, and they knocked it out of the park. What's the difference between the two?
That's the benefit of being the industry leader. At the end of the day, like, it was on Xbox to really, really, like, knock it out of the park. And they did well, but it's like they didn't show us anything that made us feel like, wow, like PlayStation actually has real competition. And now it's like PlayStation made the reveal, and it's like, okay, like, cool. They're pretty much exactly the same. PlayStation wins. Yay.
Good
like,
enough isn't enough when you're in second place.
Yeah, exactly. They're the industry leader. So, of course, they're going to get, you know, the... Yeah, they're going to get the praise for just doing mediocre.
And here's another thing, though, Rick, to that question where I think they were actually able to perform very well, is the simple fact that Sony, first of all, didn't come out and make any promises about what this was. The only thing they said is PS5 reveal event. That was it. They didn't say shit else about it. So we went in completely in the dark, and that helps for not just driving hype. It sets expectations for people to say, I'm gonna sit down, just show me what you got. Instead, what Xbox did was talk about all this great quote-unquote gameplay they were showing, and this is going to be the greatest thing ever. And they underwhelmed because they set the bar too high. Nobody asked them to do that shit or to say any of it. They were the ones who set their own bar too high. So that's number one. And I think number two, when it came to PlayStation, they basically took an E3 keynote and just made it a video. And you know what Xbox did was, unfortunately, and I think this is the detriment of going first. And I don't know why the fuck Xbox keep like why Microsoft keeps doing this, but when you're first, you have to set the tone, but you also set yourself up for being undercut. And what happened is that Sony had the time to make a full presentation with beautiful video, reach out to the developers, get them in a studio and get their audio beautiful and the lighting and everything is gorgeous and all these graphics. And Xbox, because of COVID, had to just get Zoom calls. And so that made the whole presentation just feel a little too common. And it's like, bro, it's, we should all be in LA right now. Like, this is, we're recording this on what is E3 weekend. We should all be in LA half drunk right now, flat out. But the thing is that Sony gave it that E3 feeling, and Microsoft simply didn't have the time to be able to do that. Man. Damn, got him.
Yeah, I'll say that was good. I just gotta be like, you say like we should all be in LA half drunk right now, and you know what? You say that. I just remember back to being at E3 a couple of years ago and being like, I don't think anyone here is sober. Everyone here is either drunk or hungover right now. Like that is 100% of people at E3.
Yes. Well, let me ask another question. Did the presentation yesterday convince anybody who was going to buy an Xbox over a PlayStation to switch and buy the PlayStation over an Xbox now?
I personally don't think so. I think everyone's going to stay their lines because right now, I don't think anyone's seeing anything or feeling anything that's going to make them feel like the Switch is necessary. I think for me, I feel like if E3 did happen, it would have even still benefited PlayStation because now we would have got that controller in our hands, and that controller everyone keeps talking about that has haptic feedback, this, that. No one's feeling that yet, and it's something that Sony definitely, I feel like, we're really pushing, like, hey, this is the future. Like, the games look good. I'm not going to say anything about the way they looked. I think what PlayStation was probably trying to do with the PlayStation 5 is say, look at this controller, like feel this controller. This is a new way to play a game because the way it feels as opposed to how it looks.
Yeah. And they went even further as well, talking about the 3D audio capabilities of the console as well. And Sony really is thinking about it in terms of beyond just the graphical fidelity, because we've said many times on this show that the newest, hottest graphics making it beautiful is not the bar anymore. We know no matter what you buy, it's going to look good. So what else can you provide to me that is going to enhance my experience? And I think Sony is the only ones that are really beginning to answer that question in terms of creating something new that you really can't get on any other console. And so I agree with you, Brandon, that whoever is in, you know, whatever camp you're in, that's probably where you'll stay. But the problem is, then that means the PlayStation 5 is one of the best-selling consoles of all time, and Microsoft gets trounced once again.
I think
that's
too,
the problem.
Like one of the things that actually disappointed me about yesterday's announcement was they didn't show off what I thought was the one thing that this system is really going to have that's going to trump all other competitors. They didn't show off the SSD in any real meaningful way. Show me a game where we have the start screen and you press start and we're right into the game without a loading screen. That would have blown my mind. Show me someone get killed and reload, and the reload is instantaneous, and I don't have to worry about waiting 5 minutes for the game to load up the next scene. That's what's going to like be like the big step forward with this console, and you didn't show that ability at all.
Well, low-key, they did, but they didn't say that's what they were doing, because right. That is what the Ratchet & Clank gameplay demo was all about.
Yeah, jumping the speed in the dimensions.
Jumping in dimensions, the speed of being able to load the assets. And also with a game like Deathloop is not possible without the ability to instantaneously load yourself after you die. So a lot of these games are kind of already taking advantage of the system, but they didn't go out of their way to explain that. So I agree with that point. Lastly, we got to talk about the actual design and look of this thing. I'm going to be honest, man. It's polarizing. It's polarizing. People put out the memes and all that, but I'm going to be honest with you. And Jeff Keighley himself said this. Your Xbox Series X, you'll put it on your shelf in your entertainment system, and you're going to forget it's there. You're not going to be able to forget this look in this system. It is going to stand out amongst every other piece of tech you own, unless you own like a Alienware Aurora or something like that, or, you know, like a, you know, Netgear modem. But
I think I think it's worth noting, it's though, brilliant. That we've had nothing but black rectangles out of Sony now for the past 20 years. And the one time they step away from the black rectangle, we've got now the Seto Kaiba jacket going on, the Netgear modem going on, as you put it, is the one time that Xbox is like, okay, and it is as black rectangle as you can possibly imagine. Like,
I mean, first of all, the OG PS3 was not a black rectangle. It was a black, shiny oblong.
It was a black rhombus.
Yes, don't get it right.
Yeah, it's so we've hideous. Had. You're right. We've had the black rectangle. We've had the black oblong, and then we had the black parallelogram, and now we are on to the Seto Kaiba jacket. I'm into it.
But you look like you look at a company like Nintendo, right? Even though the Switch isn't, it's not their next gen console, but it's going to be the one that's like in the discussion. You have to decide you're getting a Switch and either a PS5 or an Xbox, right?
Yeah.
But even they, the company that has the weird shit, right? The company that has like the Labo made out of cardboard boxes. What is the Switch? It's a black toaster, man. Like, if you have black handles and controllers on the side of your Switch, that black box hides. It's not, you know, it just sits there. So I think like, I think PlayStation made a really smart move by knowing, like, all right, we got to go against the complete grain. Just make it white. Even if it was a white box, it would be different, I think, than everything else that's been coming out.
And you know what? And I hate to put it this way, but I also think that they've made this decision understanding that the demographics of video games are changing. Yeah. I think in its design, they've made a conscious choice to say that, yes, video gamers are not all black, hard angled edge lords, and they don't necessarily want that from their console.
Not anymore, anyway.
Not anymore. And as gaming grows, I think I look at that system from a design standpoint, and it looks more welcoming. It looks more inviting. It wants me to play it, as opposed to the Xbox, which looks like something out of Control that is going to float and throw sharp objects about my house.
Yep.
Well, here's flat the thing out. About, yeah, here's the thing actually about the Xbox that I remember. I remember when it first came out, people instantly said, oh, it looks like a PC. And I think that was, like, I don't know if that was the thinking that PlayStation had in mind, but the fact that, like, that's the first association that people had with the Xbox, the way it looks, it was a PC, even, like, further puts it out of the conversation of being a game console. Because now, like, now that you're instantly comparing it to PC, and you already know a PC is better. So, like, it looks like a PC. It's supposed to play games that's better than a PC, but it doesn't. Like, why do I need this system? But like, now you look at the PS5, like design wise, it's like, oh, okay, this is something interesting. Like, this looks like a toy, or it looks like something that we're going to be playing. It doesn't look like it's just a computer.
The Xbox is going to, if it holds up to its design philosophy there, it's going to turn into a Netflix machine. Honest to God, that's how I think it's going to, you know what I mean? Like, people that have it are going to have it, and they'll have maybe a few games for it. But if you ask them, why do you turn it on? For the most part, they're going to say to stream something. I don't know, to like turn on a streaming service. So I think, well, like you said, comparing it to a PC is they're boned. Like they are so far behind right now. It's sad.
I think the only way, and here's our, you know, last point for the day. I think the only way PS5 drops the ball on this is if both versions of the console are north of $600, you know, north of $550, up to $600. I think that's the only way they screw up this lead. If one of the versions of that console comes out at $499 or $399 even, it's a wrap. It's over.
Yeah. At this point, I'm thinking we're gonna see something along the lines of like $399 for bare bones digital version, $499 for with the disc tray, and then probably $599 with the controller and the headset bundled in. I'm guessing we're gonna see something like that. I could be plus or minus $100, but I don't think it's gonna be like the $799 that people were horrified about. So, and as long as they don't go north of like $600, I think they'll be fine.
It's a recession, bro. Like, I think, you know, again, because of this pandemic, I think both companies are painfully aware of what the market is probably going to look like moving into the holiday season. I think putting anything out at $600 that isn't a bundle, you know, crazy. If you're talking about $600 for the system, an extra controller in a game, or the system, a controller in a headset, totally different story. As opposed to bare bones, the system and none of that extra bells and whistles, I think that would be a huge misstep.
Yeah, and again, I think for me, based on these two reveals, I don't really see anything right now that justifies even going past 600. I think PlayStation will have something once people get that control in their hand and actually start feeling things. But right now, like, nothing justifies going over 600. It seems like it's just a standard console. It looks better. It has better graphics. Cool. Like, I have a PC. I don't really need to go out and go buy a PS5 or Xbox One if that's all they're going to offer me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. But that's going to be our show for today. We want to thank Brandon for joining us on the show. And Brandon, if more people want to get in touch with you and, you know, find out where you're writing, find out who you're working with at the time, where can they find out any of that information?
You can go to twitter.com/writewellalways. That's WRITEWELL always.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Brandon. We had a blast with these conversations. So for myself, Norris Howard, Callie Sloan, and Weird Beer, that is this episode of Checkpoint AFK. We are out of here.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.